Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, this is Toby Mathis and
Jeff Webb.
Yeah, hey, welcome to Tax Tuesdays. And we're already getting a bunch of questions in, which is always fun. All right, so the 100th episode of Tax Tuesday. Yeah, we've been doing this for a while. I guess this is a celebration. So Jeff is he's probably going to have non-diet soda or something.
Yeah.
Right? That's about as big as you celebrate.
Yeah, I mixed some Mountain Dew in with my Coke, so.
All right. So Jeff's here. Yeah, I'm not a good drinker either. Never been good at it. So I just don't do it.
I don't like doing it because it falls down.
Medical CPA, you can't hold your liquor. All right. So we got Tax Tuesday. We got a lot to go on. We have a lot of questions already coming through, which means we're going to have our work cut out for us. There's lots of freebie out there. You can send your friends, watch it yourself. But we have a ton of videos that we put up. We have a ton of content that we put up both on Facebook and YouTube. You can go to AndersonAdvisors.com/ either Facebook or YouTube or both. And you can certainly hit the little subscribe button on YouTube. And what it does is it doesn't email you anything. It just lets you know when there's new videos. That is a good way to communicate big tax law changes and other fun stuff. Tax Tuesday rules. Hey, we ask your questions live. We'll do our very best to answer before the end of the webinar. We try to hit them all, but sometimes they come in fast and furious. So if you don't get an answer, it's okay to say, hey, did you get this? We do try to answer them all. People ask all the time when I'm at events, do you really answer the questions? Yes. The only reason I don't post them up there is because some people ask very personal stuff or they divulge things that I don't want the whole group seeing. Plus, your name is right next to the question, so I don't want people seeing what your questions are. If you have specific questions regarding tax, send them to taxtuesday@andersonadvisors.com. If you have something that's really personal to you and it's specific to your situation where we're going to have to spend a little more time, you need to be platinum our tax client, and then we'll engage and we want to make sure that we do the appropriate engagement. This is fast, fun, and educational. We want to give back and help educate. The whole idea here is that it's kind of brain food. The more you hear this stuff, and again, I get this all over when I speak. I'm shocked at how many of you guys are out there. Like, there's thousands of people that listen to this podcast every other week. A lot of people have us on the podcast, and we always have many hundreds live. It is so interesting of how many people are actually just kind of plugging in, and then they're answering the questions during the events. They're like, I know the answer to that. So it's good. So it works. It's the whole idea. Share some knowledge. All right. Opening questions. We'll be going over these and more, your live questions too. All right. If you have an S-Corp and hire your own children for earned income, are all of the payroll taxes you pay to the government written off as a business expense? How often and where do you send the payroll taxes, or where are they withheld? We will answer that. We'll also be answering, we currently hold single-family resident properties, that's what SFR means if you're not a real estate person, under a pass-through entity, meaning it flows under the individual's return with a separate LLC to manage the properties. How much and how often should the managing LLC be paid? So this is about the management fee. Is it a percentage of rent each month, or can we do a lump sum at the end of the year? Does the managing LLC need to show a profit, or can it write off, or can it pass on losses to our personal return? We'll answer that one. All right. Here's a fun one. I always like it when we have our foreign friends, especially from Israel. I wanted to know if there's a preferred tax structure for a foreign investor compared to a U.S. investor. I registered my LLC back in 2015 and now owns 7 rental properties in upstate New York. I have a Social Security number and I pay my taxes in the U.S. and in Israel where I reside. So we'll get to that one. Fun one here. I have a question. I think I'm asking in the right place. Of course. I'm an independent contractor through a company who pays me to coach their clients. Last year, they gave me a 1099. Due to the volume of my income, I established an LLC S-Corp. That company now sends the money to the LLC, and the LLC pays me. Do I have the option to be self-employed as a contractor and get a 1099 from the LLC, or must I be an employee and have taxes taken out? So we'll go over that. That has a lot of interesting issues. Do you have to file a tax return if you have an LLC owned by a solo? And that solo means a solo 401k. The LLC holds investment real estate. Can you please detail what the 20% rule is all about and how to use it? Think I know what you're asking. We'll get that. Here's a fun one. I paid for real estate classes in March of 2019. I'm studying to take my real estate license in October. As a realtor, can I consider what I paid for the classes tax deductible? Even if I become a realtor after many months, do I need to create an LLC to claim the classes as tax deductible? We'll answer that. If I own a timeshare, not as an investment, and I go there 1 week a year, are there tax deductions I can take? Do IRS Section 179 depreciation rules apply equally to S&C Corps or C&S Corps? Can I deduct business expenses on my personal tax return if I only do business as an LLC? We'll answer that. I'm remodeling an apartment building and believe cost segregation might be an option. What are the reporting requirements? We'll go over that one too. What are the advantages of qualifying as a real estate professional? Does that trigger special documentation? Great questions. I probably say this before, but you guys are asking really good questions lately. Like, we get tons. But this week, like, I remember going through a lot of questions, and they're all pretty extensive. Like, there wasn't a lot of one-liners in there. So this is people being thoughtful and asking really good questions. So I love that. Makes us raise our game. So here's our first question. If you have an S-Corp and hire your own children for earned income, are the payroll taxes you pay to the government written off as a business expense? How often and where do you send the payroll taxes withheld? What say you, Jeff?
Well, if you're hiring your own children, you treat them like any other employees. You do have to withhold certain taxes. The exception with your children is you probably won't have to have workers' compensation for them. You probably won't have to have unemployment taxes for them.
Mm-hmm.
So you do save a little bit there. But otherwise, the taxes you pay on their behalf, such as the employer share of Social Security, that is a business deduction.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how often you deposit these funds, like your federal taxes.
You're paying half, right?
You're paying half, but you also have the employee share that you have to deposit mm-hmm. with the government. And there's actually multiple rules of deposit rules of when you mm-hmm. have to. It could be monthly, it could be quarterly, it could be 2 days after the payroll, depending on how big your payroll taxes are.
So there's no federal requirement for how often you pay somebody. It's usually state level.
Right.
In fact, there's not a single federal, like you could pay them once a year if you wanted to and do the withholding then. States are a little different, but if it's a child, your child, just make sure they're doing something. And you really have two options whenever you're paying your kids. If you're paying them through an S-Corp, you're paying them a salary.
Mm-hmm.
But if one of the spouses can be a contractor for the S-Corp, you could pay that spouse and that spouse could pay the child out of their company. In other words, the child wouldn't work for the S-Corp. They would work for the one-off business as long as it had substance. So, for example, if you had a real estate company and one of the spouses set up a advertising company that handled all of the advertising and they set it up separate as a sole proprietorship with the sole purpose of, hey, I want to get paid and I want to pay this child too, you could avoid the withholding if you did that. Seems like a lot of steps to go through for probably a little bit of benefit. So I don't think I'd probably do that. Otherwise, you're just running them through payroll and yeah, you got some withholding, but they're paying into Social Security. And so the company deducts their half. The other half is the employee. The employee gets a deduction off of that, don't they?
Yes.
Kind of.
One thing I would not recommend is paying your kids as independent contractors.
Mm-hmm.
Because as soon as they get paid more than $400, they're going to start getting subject to self-employment tax.
Yep. That's that little self-employment tax we keep talking about is old age, death, and survivors. Actually, as an individual, it's not deductible. It's just the company's half.
Right.
Just the company half. You know, so the reason we call it the self-employment tax is because when you're an independent contractor or sole proprietor, you're paying both halves. You're paying the business half and the employee half. You get to write off half of it. When you're an employer like an S-Corp, then you're paying half and the employee, the child, is paying half. But either case, the government's going to get its due. They're going to get their little piece. But you are paying into Social Security, so you're going to start earning your benefits. You're getting your quarters up. As far as the how often, realistically, it really depends on the circumstances. I wish there was an easy way to answer this other than to say, hey, if it's a child and they're actually working for your business and they're doing stuff as part of the business. In other words, you're bringing them along. Have a lot of clients that have their children involved in their businesses when they're younger. And as they grow, they continue. And then the kids end up taking it over. Kids draw substantial salaries. They do benefits. They do all that stuff that you should be doing. and it starts somewhere. But if we're talking about a 12-year-old pushing a broom versus an 18-year-old doing extensive research or social media or marketing or, you know, going out and selecting properties or being involved in your business, those are all very different things. And absolutely, you can pay them. And it's up to you guys to decide how often. I would use a payroll company.
I was just going to say that a lot of these issues go away if you use a payroll company, as far as when you have to deposit, where does it have to go? Because the payroll company is taking care of all that.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Next question. We currently, and some of you guys are asking some pretty big questions online too, so we'll get into that. For those of you guys who were on the cost segregation webinar, unbelievable the amount of money I've seen some of these folks. Like we've had a few where it's $300,000 and $400,000 deductions that they got, and just like nobody knew. So that was pretty awesome webinar. We put it up on our YouTube channel. I don't have the link. Maybe Susan Smart, she knows how to put it up there. If you guys want to, if you didn't get to see it, you should. But we've had folks just knock it out of the park as far as getting massive deductions that they didn't realize that they could take. It's always nice when somebody says, hey, you just paid me. Like, I just saved. There was one guy, he paid, I think it was about $3,000 was the cost segregation study. The total in his pocket is about $70,000. It was several hundred thousand. So like that. All right. We currently hold several SFR properties, single family residence is what that means, under a pass-through entity with a separate LLC to manage the properties. So when they say pass-through, that just means that it's flowing through to the owner. And I'm going to assume that owner is the individual. How much and how often should the managing LLC be paid? Is it a percentage each month, or can it be a lump sum at the end of the year? Does the managing LLC need to show a profit, or can it pass on losses to our personal return? Jeff, do you want to take a whack at this one, or do you want me to jump on it?
Well, how much and how often? I think ideally it's you actually run it like a property management company.
Mm-hmm.
So the property management company, your LLC manager, is actually collecting rent, paying expenses, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And they're keeping a percentage of that income. They're not passing all the income back to.
Yeah.
And typically I see it at 10%. It can be higher. It can be a little lower. Don't want to go crazy.
So here's the big one. When you have a pass-through entity, if it's a partnership, then anything you pay that corporation is considered a guaranteed payment to partner, and it reduces the amount of taxable income that comes through. So this begs the question then on your other, you know, on the other question about whether it needs to show profit. Technically, it's supposed to show profit. If it's a C corp, we don't care. So it's an LLC taxed as a C corp. It's not subject to the hobby loss rules. That's section 183 of the Internal Revenue Code. And C corps are not included in that definition. If you read it, you'll see it's S corps and individuals. So that LLC, which doesn't exist for tax purposes, we tell the IRS what it is for tax purposes, we'll make that a corporation. You can create losses in that corporation if you want. If it creates loss in the LLC, then the question is whether you're eligible to take passive losses. So if it's a single family resident and it has net losses, then you can't take them except in a couple circumstances. Number one, I'm a real estate professional. Number two, I'm an active participant in real estate and I make less than $100,000. It actually phases out between $100,000 and $150,000, in which case I can take up to $25,000 of deduction. I know I just threw a lot at you guys. Just know that you can pay that management company. It's my personal belief is you should make it a fixed amount each month. I don't like having it related to too many percentages. I like to just say, hey, I'm going to pay my managing LLC, and it's going out and it's managing the managers, it's managing the accountants, it's managing the lawyers, it's all these things that it's handling on the behalf of the other LLCs. So usually there's a holding LLC in it, and there's a management company that manages it. And then you are literally in the world of, I am paying an executive to manage my entire portfolio. I'm not just a property manager, but I'm managing everything. Anyway, so that's...
Yeah, I've seen a couple lately where the management companies have been other pass-through entities, which to me doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It's all putting the money back in the same pot at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Hey, real quick, somebody asked a question. I'm just going to knock a couple of these out. We're getting a lot of them. I asked this question via email. Maybe you can ask it personally. I'm a Platinum member. Thank you very much. I have two rental properties in separate LLCs, and I deposit the rent into each one of their accounts. That's fine. Am I able to use the money as I wish without a problem? So, Karen, the answer is actually, yeah, if those are disregarded to you. So if they're flowing directly under your return 100%, then yeah, we don't care. You can take the money out. it's the profits flow down to you. It's always separate than what your actual capital account is. Your accountant at the end of the year just basically takes it out of your capital account. Here's it increased with all your revenue, and we decrease and we're just withdrawing the money. So it's, we're just taking our capital account out. So yes, it's kind of like having a safe. This is a question on the definition of specified service or business, the 20% QBI deduction. I have an S corp. Some of my business activities do fit the definition of consulting. Some don't fit into the definition. So Kathy, I forget the percentage of activities, like 60% or more for QBI, the way you're specified service. There's a threshold that you use, and I think it's like 60% or more of the income. So if you have a business that does both.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
Then do you know the threshold?
I do not know the threshold. Well, because I was thinking she was asking that she has some businesses that are separate businesses, some are consulting.
They aggregate them all together. It's kind of crazy. Right. But Kathy, so there is a way to look at it, and it's up to you as to how you want to classify it. I you know, if it's me, I put it in the light that's best for me. Considering buying a condo in Orlando close to Disney, some have HOA fees. Are HOA fees deductible? Elijah loved the question. And the answer is it depends on whether that's an investment property or whether you're using it as a vacation home. If it's just a second home, then chances are no, HOA fees are not deductible. It's a personal expense. But if you rent that out to other people and you are careful, what is it, the 10% rule, 14 days if you use it.
Oh.
So if he uses it less than 10% of the rental days, then it's not an investment. Well, then it is. It's an investment property. He doesn't have to worry about aggregating. So there's a couple of different levels here. So I'm not going to dive too deep into them. But if you are renting it to third parties, then the question is, at what level are you using it compared to those third parties? And they look at a ratio. And if the ratio is too high, where like you're using it more than 14 days and more than 10%, then they make you take partial deductions on the right. HOAs and stuff.
You can end up not getting any deductions beyond what income you're earning.
Mm-hmm. At what level of investments does it pay to say family office? A family office to me just means you have somebody who's in charge of the assets of a family who's managing them for that family. Is there a legal definition for family? I've never
really. No, because I've seen family office used for businesses and stuff.
Yeah, some people say family office and it's not really. They just happen to be the accountant for the family. And they go, this is a family office. Now, usually you have somebody that's full-time working for and handling the assets of a particular family or a trust with lots of beneficiaries. All right. We reside in the U.S., have property in the U.K. Can we do a 1031 exchange into U.S. real estate? I don't believe so. No. I think it has to be U.S. real estate.
You can go foreign to foreign, but you cannot go foreign to domestic.
That's wild. I know you can't go domestic to foreign either.
Yeah, I think that's also true.
You could do U.S. Virgin Islands. I think it's territories
right.
Count, but that's about it. Can I deduct any and all expenses to visit expos, seminars, and investigate different funds to deduct any and all expenses? Well, that's kind of funny. If you're an active business, if you're an investor, and this is a term of art, then the answer is no. If you are an active business, then the answer is yes. And if you don't know, then you call us. All right. Want to hire a medical assistant to work with me in two different practices I own and the other owned by others. Can we split the cost for salary and benefits as an employee or IC? Thanks. Wow, that's kind of a fun one. So they have two different practices, one owned by them and the other by others. So there's two ways to do it. You either put her on two different pay or him on different payrolls, or you have one company cover the payroll and the other cost company reimburse half of those payroll costs, et cetera.
Yeah, it's fine splitting the actual payroll, but the benefits, one company or the other has to actually be paying those benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like you said, just split the cost between them.
Yep. And you got to be just a little careful that you're not giving them benefits. If there's other employees there and that other company is getting better benefits, you may have some control group issues.
Mm-hmm.
It's best to seek the advice of a professional. Make sure what the ratios are. It sounds weird, but trust me. What are the tax implications when rolling a TSP account into a solo 401k?
It's just like any other account. The one thing you can say about the TSP accounts is they're pretty darn secure.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably the most safe real estate investment there is, as far as the company's not going to belly up or the plan itself is not going to go under.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's pretty much as like rolling any other retirement plan into a 401k.
I don't think there's an issue. So as long as there's either direct rolls or you're rolling it to an IRA and then into the 401k. So
yeah, I like the idea of always trying to do a direct roll.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get the money in your hands.
Yep. And you can only do that indirect roll once a year. I know people always do this to me. So when I answer questions and they start saying, hey, I thought this was on foreign properties and stuff. Oh, did I skip the foreign properties? That's bad. No. Let's see. No, I didn't. Look at that. I don't know where I went. All right. I wanted to know if there is a preferred tax structure for a foreign investor compared to a U.S. investor. I registered my LLC back in 2015, and it now owns 7 rental properties in upstate New York. I have a Social Security number and pay my taxes in the U.S. and in Israel where I reside. So first off, it's always a big question about when you have a non-U.S. resident as to whether there's a treaty between the countries, because the U.S. taxes worldwide income if you reside here. And so it doesn't matter where you're a citizen of, they just, if you start staying here in the U.S. too much, they're like, great, we need you to file taxes on all of your income worldwide. If you green card here, you're going to be paying that. What do you have?
So they have a Social Security number, so I'm assuming they have a green card.
Maybe, maybe not.
They're a U.S. resident.
Yeah. So if they do, or they have an ITIN, or I mean, or they're just a resident here, you can get a Social Security card. Even if you're on a visa, you can get a Social Security number, I believe.
Well, you have to be a U.S. resident.
You have to be a resident. You have to be a resident when you get it. So they get it, and then maybe they go back. So
otherwise, like you said, they get an ITIN if they have some other type of visa.
A big question, though, is whether or not there's a treaty and how that treaty impacts your taxation. So for example, Israel, I was just dealing with this the other day, and they give you a credit for your U.S. taxes paid. The bigger issue is when you're doing the LLC, whether they're going to do some required withholdings. And so you like using the LLC because it keeps you away from the other party becoming the withholding agent.
Right. Yeah, I kind of like keeping the LLC on the individual, disregard it to the individual rather than through another pass-through entity. Or
mm-hmm.
If this is truly a foreign investor, then S corporations don't work. So it would have to be a partnership.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't particularly like putting rental properties into a C corporation.
You can't have an S corp because he's not a resident.
He's ineligible to be a resident.
Right.
I mean, an S corp.
It's weird when you S corps, you can be a foreigner living in the U.S. and still have an S corp, but you cannot be a non-citizen and reside outside the United States. It's kind of a weird one, and it will actually cause you to lose your S status, even if you're a shareholder in an S corp. One shareholder loses their status, boom, the whole thing becomes a C corp. So I like the way it's structured personally. So I just look at it, 7 rental properties. The only thing that I have is that I worry about is if you have all 7 properties in one LLC, you're asking for a problem if something happens on one of those properties, meaning that you have inside liability. One thing happens on one property in that LLC, they get to go after the other 6. So I would like to see them separated into separate LLCs if possible. As far as the taxes you pay in the U.S., that's probably a 1040 NR, which means 1040 non-resident. And any taxes you pay in the U.S., I'm sure you're claiming as a credit in Israel. If you are not, you make sure you do that and tell your accountant to go back and amend. If I don't know what the amendment rules are in Israel, but you overpaid your taxes if you're doing both. I heard you could be an illegal alien and still get a Social Security. Just saying, you know what I'm saying? No. I think you can get I don't think you have to be a green card holder to get a Social Security number. I'm not sure. I think you just have to be a resident.
Are you looking to lower your taxes, protect your assets, and grow your wealth? Are you a real estate investor, stock trader, or business owner? If you answered yes, Anderson Advisors Tax and Asset Protection Workshop is for you. Let host Clint Coons, Toby Mathis, and Michael Bowman teach you how to protect and keep more of what you earn. Our workshops are held monthly throughout the country and via live stream. Two in-person tickets to the workshop are only $99. To learn more about the dates and locations, visit AndersonAP.com and register today.
Why no rentals in a C corp? Tess, it's bad. Here's why it's bad. Because you have appreciated assets that technically you would never have to pay tax on if it's in your individual name. That if you take it out of the corporation, it's going to be a deemed distribution. It's the profits get taxed at the corporate level, and then they'll be taxed to the recipients of that money at best as dividends, which if they're ordinary dividends, it's ordinary rate. If it's regular, if it's qualified dividends, then it's your long-term capital gains rates. That's why people tend to freak out about it, is that they're worried and you may be required to take a salary. And so all of a sudden you're taking stuff that wouldn't have been taxable and you're taxing it nasty. So so I have clients that do a lot of activity, the development activity, the flips and everything else in a C-Corp, no problem. But if you're holding properties long and you're trying to get the depreciation, your personal benefits, you're going to find yourself in trouble, because at some point, if you try to finance that thing, they're going to make you take it out of the C-Corp to do it. And you just have a deemed distribution. Now you're paying a pretty ugly tax on that.
And there's also the tax issue of your C-Corporation has nothing but rental properties in it. And you're making pretty good money on these rentals.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be subject to that personal holding tax, which is an additional 20% tax.
Yeah, they still nail that even with the flat tax.
Exactly.
Yeah. So if it's just rents, royalties, dividends, and interest, if it's more than
60%
of your income, then they punish you. All right. So don't do it, Tess, unless you really have some good direction. I have a question. I think I'm asking it in the right place. I'm an independent contractor. So first off, an independent contractor just means the company is not hiring them as an employee, but they're paying them as an outside party, like a company. Last year, they gave me a 1099, which is perfect. Due to the volume of my income, I established an LLC taxed as an S-Corp. So when they say LLC S-Corp, you guys that have been around for a long time know that LLCs don't exist to the IRS. We just tell it how we want it to be taxed. It's an S-Corp. And the reason that you do the S-Corp is because in an S-Corp, A, you have an accountable plan. You get all sorts of tax benefits. B, it can pay you a salary, which means C, any of the profits coming to you are not subject to Social Security taxes. You avoid old age, death, and survivors and Medicare on a substantial portion of your income, which can save you about 14% on that income. For $100,000, it's going to save you between $9,000 and $10,000 a year. So then let's finish the rest of the question. That company now sends the money to the LLC and the LLC pays me. Do I have the option to be self-employed as a contractor and get a 1099 from the LLC, or must I be an employee and have taxes taken out? Jeff, do you want to knock that one out?
First off, you can't be a 1099 employee or 1099 contractor. You're by rule of law an employee of the S Corporation.
Because it's your S Corp.
Right.
You're an employee of it.
So the only time you could get a 1099 is if you were doing work outside of your normal duties. Still for your
own. You wouldn't even do it. Here's an easy one. You would never do that.
it actually destroys the whole purpose of what you set the S Corporation up.
Yeah, because 1099, you're making yourself subject to Social Security taxes. And then with the S Corp, all that money that would not have been subject to Social Security, now you still have a salary requirement to take it where you're going to have withholding. Otherwise, that money is subject to self-employment tax. So, and then somebody just said, hey, somebody's correctly noting an issue. Notary publics, you don't pay Social Security tax on. So it doesn't really matter. So if this is you as a notary public, then you have a statutory exemption from having to pay the Social Security taxes. Everybody else, this is what the rule is. And frankly, this is the rule. Like, you're never going to be in a situation in for coaching what you're doing. You're never going to be in a situation where it's bad for you to be taking a small salary out. In fact, I would marry this thing with a 401k and really get some tax savings.
So the accountant gives the why you can't and the lawyer gives the why you should.
Yeah. What do you mean? No, this is great. You actually have a great structure. Now you just have to tweak it to get the you have a hot rod and you're saying, hey, should I put water in the tank or should I put some nitro? Do the nitro, baby. All right. Do you have to file a tax return if you have an LLC owned by a solo? So one of Han Solo's. So Ben Solo. So what's he now?
So we've had cases.
Kylo Ren. Come on. Give me some Star Wars love here. No, it's Solo 401k. See, I was just.
So if it's owned solely by a Solo 401k, then the answer is no. But we've run into cases where it may be in a joint venture or a partnership with multiple exempt organizations.
Yep.
And in that case, you do have to file a return, even though those K-1s from that partnership go to Never Never Land. They don't go anywhere.
Right. They just go in. So here's the deal. If you have a solo 401k, you don't have to file a tax return for it unless you have over $250,000. So when you say solo, that means you and a spouse or you and a business partner. If it's you and a business partner, you're filing a 500.
Right.
If it's you and a spouse and you're over $250,000 in there, you're filing a 5500 if it owns assets and that asset includes the LLC. If the LLC is disregarded to the solo 401k, it doesn't have to file a tax return. It's disregarded. We told the IRS, ignore that LLC. It's really just a big 401k. Remember, LLCs don't exist to the IRS. We tell it what it is. So we tell the IRS, hey, ignore that and just treat it as a 401k. Now, if that LLC is a partnership, then we have to give K-1s to the partners. So then the LLC has to file a tax return. And that partner could be solo 401k and somebody else. Technically, it could be you. It sounds weird.
With a solo 401k and an IRA.
Yeah. And this is going to trip some of you guys out there that are in the financial services industry, because you're always told you can't partner with your own 401k. Actually, you can. You can't transact a bunch of business with it actively.
Right.
And then even then, you could do a Rob's transaction and get away with it if it's a C-Corp. So I don't even want to go down that hole. It makes my head hurt. All right. Keep going. We have a lot of questions. So let me go back to some of the questions. And don't yell at me because I'm not going to advance the slide. I got like people mad that we weren't advancing the slides earlier. I have a rental property for 18 years and the lease is coming up for renewal. Should I sell the property to my LLC? No. Well, I can't even imagine, like, when would you ever sell it? Well, unless that LLC is taxed as an S-Corp, maybe, and then, no, I can't think of a single situation where you would do that. You're not going to get the big benefit. What you would do is, if you're going to sell it, you better have a really good reason to sell it. You could transfer it into an LLC, but that 18 years means you've substantially depreciated it. I just can't see a reason why I would sell it. Is the 50% too high on a management fee? We were talking about management fees earlier, and realistically a set amount, then I don't really care what percentage it is. It just has to be reasonable.
Here's my issue with the 50% is now you're reclassifying what the income is.
I'll just pick an amount, $100,000 a year. Just as long as you could be paying somebody to run a company $100,000 a year. The IRS isn't going to like beat up on you. I haven't seen this come up in 22 years. How many times? Well, you've been doing this longer than me. How long have you seen that we're both awesome? That's what I'm trying to say. I can hear Patty cackling.
No, I haven't seen this.
Oh. Yeah. So we always like, I saw this issue. The case on this was a $15 million management fee where they didn't let them take about $1 million of it. Everybody was like, oh, see, you have to really document your management fees. Yes, you document your management fees, but the amount just has to be reasonable. And God knows what's reasonable. Can you go over the depreciation on rental properties? Say I buy a rental for $500,000 and rent it out pretty much break even. Explain how the depreciation can help in this case. So how depreciation works is you get a deduction based on the improvement on that land. You don't depreciate land. You depreciate the improvement on it. And you have a couple different choices. If it's like what you just said here, it's rental property, then the question is it residential or is it commercial? And if it's residential, then the default rule is you write off 1/27.5 every year of whatever the improved value is, and you would use it as a deduction. Now, if you're breaking even, I don't know what that really means. That means the actual expenses on that property before you even take depreciation is breaking even. Then we have a little bit of a problem because now you're going to have a loss. And Steve, that's not going to necessarily benefit you right away. You're going to carry forward that loss every year until you have income to be offset with it. Or you would need to be a real estate professional, in which case you can offset your other income. There is another exception, which is if you make less than $150,000 a year, it's really $100,000, $150,000, it starts to phase out, and you actively participate, you manage the manager, then you can write off up to $25,000 a year against your active income. So I hope that helps. I have a dormant S-Corp in California. Can I use this to be my management company? Or should I create a C-Corp? It depends on your situation. You'd want to email us. But yeah, if you have an S-Corp just sitting around doing nothing, I'd look at the articles and I would look at its bylaws and make sure that it doesn't have problems that are going to come back and haunt us. And you could absolutely use it as a, if that's where you reside, I should say.
I wouldn't do it if you don't reside there.
Yeah, because California is expensive. Can you explain when depreciation recapture is bad when you sell a rental? Depreciation recapture is when you can answer this. You're the accountant here.
Depreciation capture is never going to exceed gain on the sale of your property. And all it is it's a slightly higher rate of taxation. So if you're in the 22% bracket, it's going to tax you at 25%, basically on some of the depreciation that you've previously taken. So it's just a slightly higher rate.
And it's up to 25%. It's your ordinary bracket up to 25%.
Right.
So if you are in the 15%, is there a 15% bracket? 12 now. Yeah, it went down. So if you're in the 12% tax bracket, that's what it's going to be the recapture at.
But if you're in the 32% tax bracket,
then it's capped at 25. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then it's not so bad. The other side is that if you've done a cost segregation, you broke out your 5-year, 7-year property, you've owned it that long, you're probably going to not pay a lot of recapture, and you're not going. It wouldn't be traditional recapture; it'd be taxed as ordinary income, but it's almost non-existent and keeps you moving things over to the capital gains.
And the big difference here is instead of paying the normal capital gains rate, you're going to pay that. You could be paying that higher 25%, which is not as good as the capital gains rates, but it's not as bad. Could not be as bad as your ordinary rates.
Somebody says, so if I want to do only fix and flip, do I have to do it in LLC or can I do it by a C corp? So this is fun. We can all make fun of him. Just teasing. LLCs don't exist to the IRS, so we tell it how we want it to be taxed. I would tax it as an S or a C corp. If you are an active business, don't do that in your individual name. Can the home office deduction be applied to more than one entity if business is conducted for both? Depends on the space if they're both exclusive. Otherwise, you're just doing one. So if you have two rooms, one for each business, then you do it. If you have one, then make sure it's for one. I wouldn't be, I don't think you can sit there and divide it up.
Well, you could say one room for two businesses. You're just going to split the expense in half.
I think it has to be exclusive. Like I just remember in the back recesses of my brain, I remember them saying, if you have more than one business, you fail the exclusivity test. Mm. Maybe it's not something they pick on because they don't even see these the way we do them. They don't even see the, like if you're doing a reimbursement, don't do it as a home office, do it as a reimbursement from your business. It's not, there's no paper trail there. Then you don't have to worry about it. What else? The best way for foreign investors to invest in large scale commercial U.S. properties, recommended organizational structure. So we were talking about this one earlier. You want to have a U.S. based business so you don't have withholding issues, because anybody paying you money becomes a withholding agent and it's a 30% withholding. So you want to avoid that if you can. And the easiest way to do it is to have a U.S. taxpayer that owns it. And then you own that U.S. taxpayer, if that makes sense. So I would have a U.S. entity owning your interest. Somebody says dual residency, U.S. and Samoa. Samoa is a territory, though, right?
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry, Jennifer. You're good because Samoa is still one U.S. tax return. They don't have a separate tax return. Bad Toby has been reading all these questions. Like, you got to see, like, this list is pretty extraordinary. You guys like to write. No, Western Samoa. Is Western Samoa non-territory?
I don't think that's American Samoa. I think that's separate.
All right. So, Jennifer, if it's an independent nation, so if that's the case and you live in Hawaii, then your worldwide U.S. assets are taxable there. And it's up to whether they will give you a credit for the U.S. taxes paid. But you would have to pay taxes on worldwide income. So if you're making money in Western Samoa, then you would be reporting it on your U.S. tax return. Yes.
This is where we get into some of the complications of where you are a tax resident.
Mm-hmm.
And we see nations fighting over this.
All right. Let's see. This is something. There's a bunch of goofy questions. I think you guys are drinking out there. I've decided. Can you please detail what the 20% rule is all about and how to use it? Yeah, you're supposed to give 20% of your money to me. You just write the check. No, I wish, right? No, that's our government. And actually, it's more like 30. Can you please detail the 20% rule? So here's what they do. If you have qualified business income, so it's active trader business income, including rental, if it's non-triple net lease, including residential versus commercial, all these things qualify for this 20% deduction. It's what the Tax Cut and Jobs Act gave everybody other than the C-Corps. C-Corps, they cut their tax by almost 50%. For you and I, they said, hey, we're going to give you a little gift. And what we're going to let you do is deduct 20% of your income, your qualified business income. You rapped on me. Your 20% of your income. So you have the 20% deduction. So if you make, you always make it, put it in English. If I'm a sole proprietor and I make $100,000, I am going to get, and that's all I make, even if I'm in a specified service business. There's this thing called a specified service business. If you're in medical, dental, legal, accounting, consulting, performing arts, all these things where you are the business, then they call you a specified service. But if I'm at 100,000, I don't need to worry about any phase outs or anything like that. It gets kind of complicated. The more you make, it starts to phase out. But I would get a 20, if my net is 100,000, I would get a 20% deduction off the top and I'd only pay tax on 80,000. That's the 20%. And it's on net income, Mina. So under that scenario, you'd get a nice $20,000 deduction. Now, here's the problem. The more you make, it phases out. So for an individual, and I forget the exact number now, it was like $157,000 to $207,000, you'd phase out. If you're a married couple filing jointly, it's around $320,000 to $420,000, it phases out. And you start applying a different test. If you're a specified service business, you're done. You don't have to apply a test. It's zero. If it's anything else, then you start doing a 50% of W-2 wages versus 2.5% of the assets plus 25% of W-2. And you compare all of this to 20% of your taxable income. Yeah, you're doing this weird test and it gets really like you actually have to run these numbers towards the end of the year to make sure you're not stepping on something. So what it really comes down to when we do the planning is we're looking at everybody saying, what if we do here? How is it going to affect it? And you're looking for the best ratio. And so, for example, again, same scenario with the sole proprietor making the $20,000 deduction. You're looking at that. Then you're comparing that to like an S corp where maybe they take a $25,000 salary and they only have $75,000 that flows out that's subject to the 20%. So you're looking at it going, oh, man, I only got a $15,000 deduction. However, you saved 15.3%. on the old age, death, and survivors of Medicare. So when you start comparing the two, you start realizing, wait a second, my 20% may be less, but my overall tax savings may be higher, which is why, if you haven't heard us say this before, this is the rule of tax planning. It's called calculate, calculate, calculate. You got to do your calculation. You always got to do your calculation. What is a specified service? The 20% specified service just means, legal, architecture, engineer.
Architecture, no. Got an exception.
They got an exception to architecture?
Yes, they did.
Oh, strike that. Not architecture. It's basically the architects, really?
Really.
When did they do that? That's wild. So anybody that's in the field of medical and accounting and legal, for sure, mm-hmm. they toast you, or performing arts.
Or professional sports.
Performing arts.
Okay.
I don't know. Isn't that performing? Well, whatever it is. So engineering, yes, I believe that you're a specified service. And what they do is they say, we don't like that particular type of business. You don't get this big deduction because you make so much money. So that's kind of what they're thinking. In which case, then you look at it and say, maybe I should make it a C Corp because they slash the C Corp taxes in half. And we start running numbers to see which one's the best.
I'm actually expecting to see a lot of court cases in the next year or two on this. What is a specified service?
Yep. Yeah. So it gets, you know, Cruz, our YouTube channel, I dove into detail and frankly, it gets muddy. So unless you're looking at the rules and you're going through the current regs, because they screwed it up too. Like the IRS publicized that real estate agents couldn't use it. And then the regs said, yeah, you could. So you have conflicting documents out there where if you followed the publications, you wouldn't take it. But if you follow the regs, you do. And we know that the instructions are not law, but the regulations are. So the regs went out. And then somebody says, isn't engineering under architecture?
I'm not sure if it is or not.
We'd have to look.
You know, one of the issues I've seen with this is we go through all these crazy calculations and we come up with our deduction from the qualified business income is $20,000, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
But you find out your taxable income on your 1040 is only $50,000.
Right. It's because you get to take all your retirement plan deductions and your charitable deductions and everything, and it moves your taxable income down.
So what it ends up saying is it's the lower of the 20% of QBI or 20% of your taxable income. So I've seen a lot of people expecting this $20,000 deduction, but they're only getting a $10,000 deduction.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Here's all you have to do is how do I take it and how do I get the most out of it? And so when we actually do year-end planning, you're literally looking at it saying, hey, I need to pay more salary out of my company so that I can get more of the deduction. Like you literally are sitting there running the analysis saying, hey, what if I put too much into my retirement plan? If I'm doing a defined benefit plan or if I'm giving a bunch of money away to charity, and you're like, oh, it's phasing me out of my 20% deduction. Well, you should know that. You should actually be taking that into consideration. Maybe I'll wait a month to give a bunch of money away if I need to give the money away just because I lose some deduction by mm-hmm. doing so. Maybe it's something you should be considering. All right, something I was just throwing up there. And the fourth edition of TaxWise is going to be coming out. I am in the final editing stage, so it's probably a month to 2 months out. So I'm not going to snow you guys, but we wanted to do something special for the 100th episode. So what we're doing if you guys know how this stuff works, we're going to do a $10 pre-order. These things are, it's a hardbound book. It's normally $29.95. We sell them at events at $20. Sell them online at $29.95. If you want to pre-order, it's $10. And I would say just pop on there, and it's aba.link pre-order. Lets me know how hard I need to prioritize this. If there's a lot of pre-orders, I'm jumping all over it. If there's not that many, I'm sorry. No, that's kidding. We have it all. We have it going through final edits right now. And I like to play around with it. Which, by the way, if you've never read Taxwise, this is the fourth edition. I first came out in, I want to say 2003, although I started writing it in 1999, because myself and an accountant, much like Jeff, we had a cheat sheet, and we would just keep this binder, and we would just write out everything we could find out on certain deductions, and we just kept a book of it, and eventually we were like, okay, I should just publish this thing. And chapter five is really just a whole bunch of deductions alphabetized with the rules to take it and examples and the IRS law behind it. So it's kind of a book. I already have mine. See, you don't have the fourth edition. You probably have the third edition. I'm just teasing. I don't really care. This costs more than $10, like, you guys, to make these things.
Attention all real estate investors, business owners, stock traders, and anyone looking to get out of the rat race for good. We all know time is money, but did you know there's a wealth of resources on how to make more money, keep more money, and protect what you've earned, all for free online? Anderson Business Advisors YouTube channel offers free resources on asset protection and tax reduction from lawyers and CPAs designed to help you keep more money in your pocket. To learn how to limit your liability, protect what you've earned, and minimize your tax burden all for free, subscribe to Anderson Business Advisors on YouTube today.
All right. I paid for real estate classes in March 2019. I'm starting to take my real estate license in October. So this is somebody who's not a realtor. They're taking the real estate classes. As a realtor, can I consider what I paid before the classes or for the classes tax deductible, even if I become a realtor? After many months, do I need to create an LLC to claim the taxes as tax deductible? Classes as tax deductible. Make sure I say that. The first thing is, if you're creating a new profession, you can't write it off. So the first thing you do is you look at it and say, chances are no. But if you are already a real estate investor and you're doing this to improve your existing business, then the answer would be switched to a yes.
I agree.
Is there any other situation? Is there anything, any other situation where you could think of this?
No, not really. Like you said, it would have to be an existing business or something like this.
Mm-hmm.
But since this sounds so specific that the education is for the real estate license,
mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that they haven't been in that field before now, it's not going to be deductible.
Mm-hmm.
One of the exclusions for deductions is training to get you into a new career path.
Mm-hmm. So you got to look at it and say, am I in the real estate business? Does this help my real estate business? Now, it has to be a real estate business. So this becomes really, really, really important. And people keep asking, yeah, I think we have an electronic copy of the book. Last time we did it on Kindle, I think we can get that to you too. So we're actually going to send you a physical book. We like the physical book. I'll probably just give you the second edition came out in 2007. Yeah. And the third edition came out like 3 years ago.
I hear there's been a tax change since then.
Just a couple. Yeah. This one was a pain. I've been working on this for a year, and it's like the never-ending project. These things are fun to listen to when you're working out. It'll make you work out that much harder because you'll be like, I need to get off this treadmill to stop listening to this tax stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll run that much faster, but you'll never outrun being tax-wise. All right. As a I just don't see them being able to write it off unless they're already in the field of real estate. The big one for real estate is if you already own property, then you are in the business of real estate. If you don't own property, you're not. So if you do your real estate classes after you already own property and you're doing it to better your property, like to become more experienced, and you're not trying to become a realtor and make your living doing it, then you have a pretty good argument. Does the new one cover the job, the Tax Cut and Jobs Act? Yes, it does. That was a big reason why we had to redo it. And yeah, the 2018 rules are all included. Yes. Here's a bunch of questions. There's some cool ones. My dad owned a business with his two brothers. He is being bought out by his nephews and signed a promissory note for the purchase of the land that the business is built on. He's been receiving installment payments over 5 years and due to get a lump sum in March with the balance due, which is approximately... won't say it. Is there any way to protect him from getting a huge capital gains tax charge? Gail, the answer is probably not. However, there is a way to offset that capital gains if you reinvest it in a qualified opportunity zone.
Yep.
Do you have to do it within 180 days from him getting paid off? It would be on the receipt. I'm trying to think if it's a 1231 tax, whether it's end of the year. Is it a 1231? Am I saying that right? Capital gains.
It might be.
So what I would do is say, hey, make sure that you're talking to an accountant or one of us while you're doing it, just to make sure. But I think it would be 180 days from getting that balloon payment. Somebody says, in the home office conversation, you said reimbursement from your business has no paper trail. If you reimburse yourself, do you have to pay taxes on that personally? No, Jennifer. That's why we love accountable plans. And that's why you never have a home office that you write off on your Schedule C ever again.
So I wouldn't say it doesn't have a paper trail, because it has to have some kind of paper trail to be an accounting plan. Mm-hmm. But all you're doing at that point is you're documenting why you're paying that amount.
Mm-hmm. Somebody says, why does Toby never show a copy of his law degree? Because you don't have a law degree. You have a Juris Doctorate, and then you pass a bar. So stop it. You guys they needle me from afar, yeah. Jeff. This is like, they're not very nice. Can I order 2 books? Of course. You can order as many as you want. It's a free country, and we love you guys to share them. Can I fund a solo 401k with 1099 income from my own sole proprietor? Yes, Rick, you actually can. And the only thing is, if you're funding a 401k with a sole proprietorship, so here's the deal. When you're a sole proprietor, the reason that we tend to shy away from them, especially if it's over $30,000 of net income, it's because the audit rate is significantly higher and you pay more tax, and you can't do an accountable plan like the home office, where it doesn't have the paper trail and you get a much larger amount. So that's kind of the issue. See, somebody says the lawyer passed the bar. I thought they always stopped in and go in. You do not do a home office on a Schedule C. Why? Sorry, I don't understand why. So Deirdre, when you are a Schedule C, a sole proprietorship, you and the business are no different. You actually file a separate tax form. What is it? 8829 for your home office. In other words, you're waving at them saying, hey, look at me. I'm a sole proprietor and I'm taking a home office. When you reimburse yourself under an accountable plan, you just don't have to report it. It's not on your personal return. There's no paper trail on your personal return. I can't stress how important that is. The corporation writes it off. It has to be a corporation, but you can get so much more out of it when you do it that way, because you have about 9 different ways to determine what the amount is. And it's just absolutely night and day. I usually get that question periodically.
But now they do have this simplified safe harbor that they'll let you use on the Schedule C, the $5.
It stinks. It's $5 a square foot.
It maxes out at $1,500.
It sucks. Don't even do that. You're going to be able to get so much more. Even if you have a rental prop, even if you're a renter, you can do the home office deduction. That's the thing. So here we beat that question. If I own a timeshare, not as an investment, and go there 1 week a year, are there tax deductions I can take?
Very few. And I'll run through them real quick. The most obvious is real estate tax, which is deductible if it is billed separately or directly to you. Like, it can't be part of your maintenance. They have to actually separate it. Interest is probably not going to be deductible, because the loan has to be secured by the property, and you're not going to be able to do that if you only have that property for 1 week out of the year. Your maintenance fees are not deductible. Any other kind of fees typically are not deductible. So it's the deductions on an HOA are very, I mean, I'm sorry, on a timeshare are very difficult to get. Mm-hmm. One way to do this is if you bought the timeshare by borrowing against your personal residence or something like that, that would actually work, where you could deduct the interest payments.
Mm-hmm. There's another way that you could write it off. And that's when you do the timeshare and you go there, your business uses it and leases it. You're not even going to rent it to the business. You're not doing a typical renter, but you're reimbursing it if you're going there and using it for business purposes. So if you have a timeshare, and for example, if you decide you're going to go to a seminar or an investment, you're going to go look at investments in the area, and you meet the minimum thresholds to do that, which is 4 hours, 1 minute a day, and it's more than 50% of the time, then you can actually, and as long as it's more than 50% of the time, I'll just tell you that. Like, let's say you had this for two weeks and you used it 50% business, a little bit more, 50.1, 100% business, now you can write the whole thing off, even if you spent another part of the week. It's just weird for timeshares. But what you do is you just treat the, you're not writing it off on your personal return. You're just getting reimbursed for the expenses from the company.
Right.
And so that's how you do it. You always have to kind of do a little bit of elbow grease to marry them together. Did you already say that?
Nope.
All right. Phew. I was reading all these questions. Sometimes I get lost. Do IRS Section 179 depreciation rules apply equally to S&C Corps?
Yes, they do.
Can I deduct business expenses on my personal return even if I only do business as an LLC?
The fact that you said personal, deduct business expenses on my personal tax return, I'm not sure where to go with that.
Well, it sounds like they're doing a sole proprietorship. Can I deduct business expenses on my personal return if I only do business as an LLC? So remember, the LLC isn't a tax designation, so we have to look at that. So based off of what you're saying, it sounds like that LLC is disregarded for tax purposes. You set it up just for asset protection, in which case, yes, you could write your business expenses off on your personal return on your Schedule C, which is what it's for. But we don't recommend it. It's almost never a good idea to be a sole proprietorship. And the reason being is, A, you get the worst possible tax treatment, and B, you're in much higher audit risk. And C, when you do get audited, you lose 95% of the time because it's really hard to distinguish between you as a person and you as a business when there's no lines drawn around them. It gets kind of crazy. So I would just say you tend to pay a little more tax as a sole proprietor. Usually it's worth it to look at just being an S or a C. And yeah, somebody asked this question, can an S-Corp do an accountable plan? Yes. Where do I find a template for an accountable plan? You got to be a platinum member and we'll give you one. I do a live stream for my clients about once every 6 months where we do office meetings, and I give them a bunch of plan documents too. So yeah, so you can get them. If you're platinum, you just ask us and we'll just send them to you. Do my private lending activities within my Quest IRA count towards the time needed to qualify for being a real estate professional? Paul, the answer would be if it's lending activity.
Within the IRA?
Yeah, so what he's looking at is the 750 hours. So I don't think it does either because it's transactional. So you have to be actively involved. So, and it'd be hard to be a material participant. So Paul, I'm going to say no, but I'm going to put a, please email that question in so we could research it a little bit. I don't see how it could because they're looking for active businesses. And by its default, an IRA is not an active business. Somebody is saying, under what category do you write off your home deduction? How much do you deduct? It's teeny. You're asking a great question. I would go under our YouTube channel and check out a bunch of videos because we answer those questions. If I started diving into that, we're going to be here till midnight and I'm already over. Let's see. There's a bunch of other cost segregation. Will you please send that info? Absolutely. We'll send that. All right. Here's one. I am remodeling an apartment. The one that I actually pulled up. Stop that. I am remodeling an apartment building and believe cost segregation might be an option. What are the reporting requirements? You got this.
If you mean by reporting on your tax returns, if the cost segregation only deals with the current remodeling, you just report the depreciation as the cost segregation reports it. I'm not explaining that real clear. The difference is if you're going back in time with this cost segregation, maybe you placed the building, apartment building service a couple of years ago, then it works a little differently. We have to do what we call the change of accounting method.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a current year purchase, there's nothing unusual to report.
So what you do the cost seg, you don't have to do a 3115 because it's the first year.
It's the first year. You're not changing anything.
So what Jeff is saying in, Jeff sounds like Robert Kiyosaki. So what, yeah. So what he's, that's a really good, Robert's badass. Yeah. So when you're doing this, the big thing to think about is you have 5, 7, and 15 year property along with your structural property, which in commercial is 39 years or residential is 27 and a half. You're choosing whether to take the default, which is the MACRS, the Modified Accelerated Cost Recovery System default, which for residential is 27 and a half or 39 years for
commercial,
versus breaking it out and actually saying, here's how much 5-year property, here's how much 7-year property, here's how much 15-year property there is. And then you marry that with the fact that you could choose to take any one of those and write those off, that category of property, right now. 100%. We have bonus depreciation. So it's up to you. And you could actually go back in time and do this. Again, we did a great webinar on it. I would recommend, that was probably the highest attendance we've ever had on a webinar. And I've been doing this for 22 years. People are starting to figure this out, that if you're not in real estate, you don't understand what they gave us with the Tax Cut and Jobs Act on this provision, which is the bonus depreciation. What they did is they made stuff that used to have to be new, first use, put into service in that year. And they said, nah, you can do used.
It was huge in itself.
That's huge. For real estate investors, it's absolutely massive.
I would say that as long as you have this property, I would keep that cost segregation in your documents until you get rid of the property.
Yes. And your cost segregation helps you when you sell, too. This is the misnomer. Is everybody thinks, oh, it's a front end load. It, you know, worst case scenario, I'm getting an interest free loan. No. And yep, he says, I just spoke to my CPA about cost seg. He felt it should only be used for higher tax brackets. Okay, that's great. I would calculate it and see how much it's going to be worth to you. So, for example, I have a friend who's a property manager. He did a cost segregation. His cost to do two houses was about $3,000, and it saved him $14,000. He's not in the highest tax bracket. He just knew if I do this now, I save money. And that money right now to me means I can buy another property. And that's what he does. So I would just say to your accountant, with all due respect, let's just, you know, figure out what it's worth. Now, here's the other thing. When you do a cost seg, the recovery. So right now we're used to this idea that when I have a house, let's just say it's a rental property, and I sell that house, everything appreciated in it. When I'm doing my recovery of my depreciation, it's assuming that everything in that building is still valuable just as it was on day one. You've just, so I'm having to recapture my carpet. I'm having to recapture my fixtures. I'm having to recapture everything that's in that house, the doors and everything, as opposed to just getting rid of them and then paying capital gains on it.
Right.
So with all due respect, no, that's not, that's used to be the stuff. Now you actually go out and get it done. And again, you can get a analysis done for free over at Cost Seg Authority. We have a link. There's no cost to it. They'll actually run your property. You give them the address, the data was put in service, how much you paid for it. There's one other piece of them, probably your name. And they'll tell you, can you use Cost Seg on a residential assisted living on the real estate? Yes. Anyway, so it's pretty big deal, guys. Like it's not a small one. What are the advantages of qualifying as a real estate professional? Does that trigger special documentation? So the answer is, what are the advantages? What are the advantages of qualifying as a real estate professional? Then your real estate losses are no longer passive. They're active and they offset your personal income. Does it trigger special documentation? Not really. You have to check a box. I would aggregate and group my properties together. You do have two tests. Test number one is a both test. You have to meet 750 hours at a minimum and more than 50% of your personal time being used for real estate activities. One spouse has to qualify for a joint return. And then the second test is materially participating in your properties, which then you can grab the time from both spouses. 500 hours is the absolute best. You don't no longer have to worry about how active you were. You could actually have 10 hours if you're the only manager on your properties. So it runs the whole gamut. There's actually 9 different tests. Somebody says also a real estate professional doesn't have to pay the net investment income tax. Gary, absolutely. That's right. So there's this when you're messing around with properties and you sell a passive property, you still get hit with the 3.8 or 3.9 net investment income tax. Mm-hmm. 3.8. So let's just say you're in the highest bracket. You have long-term capital gains. You're paying 23.8 for the Fed plus your state. Yeah. So for residential assisted living, going back to that real quick, Ling, it's on the real estate only. The active business itself, you could still use bonus depreciation, but you wouldn't need to cost seg because it's not a macro asset. Does that trigger special documentation? You just have to make sure that you're meeting the hour requirements. You guys are laughing. They needle me. All right. 2 for Tuesday. We always do this. So this has kind of been our standard offer for the folks that are actually on the Tax Tuesdays and make it to the end. You guys rock. You get bulletproof investments, which is real estate investing, really. You get 2 tickets to our tax and asset protection workshop, which is for 3 days. And if you haven't been, you should absolutely go. It will change the way you look at assets and liabilities and your business activities. And you can make sure that you are not subjecting yourself to massive risk. One of the things people always ask is, what's the worst that could happen if I get into real estate? Or what's the worst that could happen if I open a business, they could take everything you own. That's what I always say. So you want to make sure it's isolated so they can't. You get Clint Coons' Tax and Asset Protection for Real Estate Investors, hardbound book. You get a instant deliverable of a 3-part video series on real estate activities. Clint goes over lawsuit protection. I go over taxation, and Michael Bowman does a lot of legacy and retirement planning. And you also get a strategy session. You get a blueprint made. If you haven't gone through those, go through it. Plus, you get the live stream of the TaxWise workshop, which we have one coming up in November, the last one of the year. And you get access to all the other recordings. And it's $197 flat. Somebody says, are you coming to Chicago? I was slated to, but I have 2 other speaking engagements over the weekend. But Michael Bowman's going to be there. And says, how does the 2-for work for Platinum? That is the 2-for price. If you're a member, I know. This is just, this is the best deal that's out there. If you're already a Platinum, it's still, there's nothing better than the 2-for deal. Free stuff. It doesn't matter whether you're Platinum or not. Just join our podcast. You can listen to all of our podcasts. Both Michael Bowman and Clint do awesome job at interviews, and we're always trying to bring things out that's important to real estate investors and small business owners. Me, myself, I've been getting into the philanthropy side a lot more and really seeing how these guys tick. It was pretty awesome. I did a recent podcast, which I think is coming out in 2 weeks, of a gentleman that trains service dogs for service members, for members of our armed services that come home. There is a bad problem that we have with self-inflicted death, suicide, yeah, of our service members. Many more are passing away every year than are dying in wars. They're dying as the effect. And the service dogs, in his experience, it's 0%. Like, this is something that it's made a major impact. And so I loved talking to these guys and seeing what makes them tick and where they're getting success. I love supporting nonprofits too that do those types of activities. And it's always interesting. The stories are so real. We do have a nonprofit workshop. I know it's sold out, so this might be a mean tease, but we do the coming up next week. We have the nonprofit workshop. So Start, Fund, Grow. If you like nonprofit stuff, I love doing that. Follow us on social media, Facebook or YouTube. Always fun. And of course, you could send your questions into Tax Tuesday. I'm going to answer a few questions before we get off. Just a few more, just because Jeff really wants to go do some tax returns, and I'm going to keep him from doing it. So you can always send into Tax Tuesday at Anderson Advisors, and you can visit us at Anderson Advisors and do all that fun stuff. Here's an interesting one. I see whenever I see a nonprofit, and she laughed. This is funny. So I'm going to answer her question, then she'll realize that I'm answering. But it's interesting. So I donated a property from a disregarded entity to my nonprofit. So what happened was an LLC bought the property and it was disregarded for tax purposes, and they put it into the nonprofit. You get a deduction. And what you want to do is get an appraisal done on that property as close as you can to when it's actually transferred, because that's what your actual donation deduction is. You get to write that off personally. A lot of folks don't realize that when you donate appreciated real property, it's the fair market value. If you've held it over a year, it's the fair market value. The only limitation you have is that it can only offset up to 30% of your income. So that's the only restriction. Cash, you can write off up to 60% of your income. If you're donating real estate itself, then it is just 30%. So I love seeing that. Let's see. Somebody says, can you cover all your properties for asset protection for property spread out in different states? Yes. You put each property in its own LLC and you have it with a holding company in a state like Wyoming, and you're pretty good. Thank you guys for spending the 100th episode with us. Excited to do another 100 more, 1,000 more. So we have really great listenership. And hold on for a second.
On our toes.
Yes, but donated real property has to be owned for over a year in order to write it off when donated to a nonprofit. No, you can only write off the fair market value if you've held it over a year. Otherwise, it's its basis. So you would be depreciate. You'd be writing it off as the basis. Yeah, so if I bought a property for $50,000 and it's worth $60,000, but I donate it within a year, I only get the $50,000 that I paid for it. My adjusted basis. So whatever I put into it, I would not, it's no longer the fair market value.
See, and this is where I've seen sometimes people will be asking about, can I buy a property and then immediately put it in the nonprofit, where it might be better to put the money in and let the nonprofit
buy it. Yep. That, and especially if you're flipping. Yep. All right, you guys, thanks for joining us. I know a bunch of you guys are already bowing out, so I'm just going to say thank you, good night, and really appreciate you guys coming on. It's always a fun community. You guys think it's all fun and games, right? No, it is. It is a fun. It is. You should enjoy this stuff, and you should be looking at taxation the way it's an incentive to do right, and if you do right, you get the incentive, and it's just knowing, and so we just try to spread that out and figure out how we can help you guys keep as much money in your pocket as humanly possible. It's best for the government. It's best for us. You end up actually paying more taxes in the long run if you're keeping it in your pocket for as long as possible. It's kind of weird the way that works, but it does work that way. All right, guys, spread the word. See you guys later.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast, and if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.